Today, I'd like to look at some of the commentary on Parshas Yireh from the Sefer Aleinu Lishabeach, written by Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein. I have the English edition from Art Scroll that Rav Moshe Zorin translated. Pasuk says, V'nitatztem es mizboi chaseihem. We have the commandment to break any type of altar that the Goyim build. And he says, Rephraim Holzberg, who I don't know, told the following story. Several years ago, he said, we in Bnei Brak received a grant from the Religious Council of Yerushalayim to restore a building called Tiferes Bachurim, which was Avraham Yoshev's base medrash. The building was 100 years old and needed repair, and we began to do the work. He says, they didn't give us all that much money, and so we looked for a contractor who would appreciate what he was building, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Gadol Hador, and they found an Armenian man, not a Jew, called Nikolai. And he was amazing. He put up the scaffolding, new plywood boards, because this was unusual, as most of the people in those days try to find used boards, and he tried to do the best job he could. The building went through this renovation, and we learned at the time that the building's initial construction was weak, and so what he had to do was reinforce it with new concrete as well, and he completed the project. Everyone was happy. A few days later, Rabbi Holzberg says, I met Nikolai. And he said, Ephraim, I'm using the boards I took out of the base medrash, the wooden scaffolding. I'm going to build a large church on Har HaZeisim, Mount of Olives. And he said, you know what? He said, it's going from one religious purpose to another. It remains in godly service. He said, me, it bothered that boards that had been used for 100 years for studying Torah were now going to be used to build a church. He said, a few weeks later, I met Nikolai again, and this time he was upset. And I said, what happened? He said, Rav Yoshev's boards destroyed the church. The church was being built illegally, and the contractor hired dozens of workers who would only work on Friday and Shabbos, when the city inspectors had off. In one Friday afternoon, they put up a skeleton of the first floor. Sunday, an inspector arrived, and he found a priest, an Armenian priest, around. And the priest was unfortunately a deaf mute. And when the inspector tried to ask him why this was being built without a permit, the priest made certain unintelligible symbols, etc. Like, even though the man, it seemed, could read lips or whatever, he wasn't answering properly. The inspector didn't understand. But anyway, he said, you know what, leave it alone. On the next Friday in Shabbos, The skeleton of the second floor was completed, and this same inspector came back. And again, he asked, "What are you guys doing here?" And he didn't get an answer. And now he became irritated. So he decided he was going to report this illegal construction to the authorities, his bosses. It says, this occurred at a time when the mayor of Yerushalayim was known to be sympathetic to Goyim. And I guess he's saying not Jews. Nevertheless, this chief inspector, the one in charge of all the building, was angered that they would do this under his nose because he had a good relationship with these people. And as an Israeli who was thwarted, he gave an order to bring down the entire three-story skeleton. And it was gone. The contractor said, "I'm pretty sure it's because I used Rav Elyashiv's boards. I took boards which had been in a shul, and I didn't realize that they could not be used for anything other than a holy purpose." And Rav Zilberstein says, "This is a fulfillment of bringing down avodah zarah type structures." We're told that we had a mitzvah, kim elamokim asher yivchar Hashem Elokeichem. We could only bring our korbanos and our holy things to the place that a Kadosh Baruch Hu will choose. And he tells a story that a couple came to Rav Zilberstein and said their 10-year-old son was having tremendous difficulty in school. His reading was poor, and he had problems with reading comprehension. He was unable to put together the Mishnayos that they were learning, some Gemara, although I guess if he was failing a Mishnayos Gemara, it's obvious. But even when it came to Chumash, to juxtapose certain concepts, he had difficulty. And they asked Rav Zilberstein, how do we handle this? So listen to this. Rav Zilberstein said, "What I want you to do is I want you to have extra kavana, and I want you to daven with all your heart for the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash." And he said, "The root of all today's problems are because we lack the Beis HaMedrash, Mikdash rather." He said, "The lack of the Beis HaMikdash was responsible for all problems, and the Beis HaMikdash was the repository of wisdom." And he said he showed them that Beis Hillel writes that a tried and true remedy for all ailments is that a person should take upon themselves to say Tikkun Chatzos every Thursday night after doing tshuva. He says complete tshuva. He says, "He seems to me that the reason for this remedy is because this is a specific tefillah in mourning the lack of the Beis HaMikdash, and it demonstrates visibly a person's sharing in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's grief that his house is not there." And he says the Kuzari, in what he calls the second essay they wrote, says that the Oroin HaKodesh was the or on Ha'edus, and it was a repository, he says, of all wisdom. That's where wisdom came from. And we know we say, Ki Mitzion Tetzesar Advar Hashem Yerushalayim. He says, two types of chachma, wisdom, came from the Oren. The wisdom of the Torah, whose bearers were the Kohanim, and the wisdom of the Nevi'im came there as well. He says, when the Beis HaMikdash was existing, Klal Yisroel had a special ownership of the wisdom of the Torah, but after the destruction, this ceased. And therefore, he said, I've always told people that the way to remedy situations is to daven for this. He says, I told the anxious parents and others who come to me, when you daven in this fashion, Hashem's help will help give you the chus, the merit, that the wisdom that's in the Aron HaKodesh will have an effect on your children, and especially on those children who find it challenging to learn. The story doesn't indicate if they came back and told him, but it also doesn't say that they came back and said, no, it didn't work. And I'm assuming the reason it doesn't say it here is because Rav Zilberstein was so sure of himself, he didn't need to have evidence that what he said was true. We're told that the notion of calculating when the Kates, when Mashiach will come, is looked at askance by many of the Meforshim, but the Malbim allowed himself to make such calculations, right? And they said to him, but it says in Sanhedrin, may the very essence of those people who calculate the Kates suffer agony. Why did you do this? He gave the following mashal. A person, along with his son, went on a long, long journey to a fair to do business. After a little while, the son asked, are we there yet? Like in that commercial for a car. And the father said, we just left a little while ago. 30 days into the journey, the father asked the wagon driver, could you please estimate how much longer we have to travel? The son said to the father, hold on. When I asked the question 30 days ago, you told me it's too early. Why ask the question? And the father said, let me explain the difference in the timing of your query and mine. When you ask at the beginning of the journey, you haven't traveled a significant distance, and it's almost of no value to try to calculate when you're going to get there. After 30 days, we've invested tremendous amount of time and effort in traveling. And I am certain that we've got to be within a day or two's distance of the fair. Therefore, it's appropriate that I can ask the wagon driver, who knows when we'll arrive, how much longer is it? The Malbim said, when the Gemara was written, and when the Gemara in Sanhedrin was written, right, He says they were referring to people who were started to do calculations soon after the destruction of the second base on Migdash and at the beginning stages of exile. The Malbim said that he, I must have been about already 18 or 1900 years in. He said, at this stage of the game, I know we're close. And so I'm allowed to make these calculations. On the same pasuk, ki loivosam arako elamanucha, Rav Zilberstein says, a very wealthy person came to me on Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and he wanted to donate a very considerable amount of money to our kollel on Cholom. And he said, but I want to ask you one thing. He said, what is that? He said, can you have the people in the yeshiva return to learn on Isru Chag, the day after Simchas Torah? He said, I quoted from him from the Shvus Yaakov, who asked whether a person can be summoned to a Beis Din right after Sukkos. And he answered, no, the Femo Yachasan cannot be summoned right away to a Beis Din because he's involved in matters relating to his chasana. A person cannot be summoned to a Beis Din right after Sukkos or Pesach, because at these times, the people have other responsibilities. They've got to take down their sukkah after Sukkos. After Pesach, they've got to turn over the house, put away all the Pesach utensils. And there are probably things that are of immediate need that they put away to do on Chol HaMoed, and said, I've got to take after it right after Yontif. He said, I'm telling you, therefore, the Kollel people are involved in doing other spiritual matters at this stage. They're helping their wives, which is an amazing, amazing mitzvah. And they're taking down their sukkahs with due care. He said, therefore, he says, that is why we delay the learning, the restarting, until, he says, Rosh Chodesh, a few days later, giving everyone a chance to take care of the immediate needs that need to be done post-Pesach. He quotes the pasuk that says that when we bring karbonos, it should be mivchar nidreichem, from the choicest of our vow offerings, meaning the very best of what we have is what we should give as hegdish. At every moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants people to invest their heart and soul in the Avodas Hashem, maximizing the abilities that we have and the quality and quantity of our mitzvot based on where we are. I'm not expected to be Moshe Rabbeinu or anything even lesser than that, but I am expected to be the best I can be. He says, let's look at the first time sacrifices were brought by Cain and Hevel. They both wanted to do Hashem's will by bringing a korban. Hevel exerted himself, and he brought, right, from the firstlings of his flock and of the choicest. Cain said, I'm going to bring from the fruit of the ground. And Rashi says that he only brought the poorest quality produce he had. Hevel realized that he was doing an action in honor of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he realized that when you do that, you do it to the best of your ability. Cain was trying basically to be Yotze, get away with the minimum. That's why Hevel's offer was accepted, and it's why Cain's offer was rejected. He says the story didn't end there. And there's much more that can be learned, he says, from studying the way events subsequently occurred. He asks the question, did Cain remain at that same spiritual level? Right? Did Cain, who had done poorly, right, stay there? Did he stay at the notion that I'm going to do the least I have to in my religious obligations? The Torah says that Cain, right, became incensed at Hevel and killed him. He said he was complacent. And he said complacency is really a spiritual descent. Dangerous. He says, staying with our status quo on a regular basis and doing what we say is expected of us is a cause of self-deterioration. We need to continue to be enthused. We need to continue to have hislavos, the bren for Yiddishkeit, and do things. He says, we know that there are many, many people who come to learn at various times. And he says, there are people who come to a Daf Yomi Shir, he says, each and every day, but they don't seem inherently to be, if he says, still growing, but they don't deteriorate. He says, how is it possible that these people don't fall into the trap that Cain had, that complacency can lead to a downward descent? He says, Rav Yecheskel Levenstein said, yes, we are expected to try to grow in spirituality. He says, even a yeshiva student who learns many hours a day should also not be complacent. But he said, let's take that in contrast to the balabatim. He says, the balabatim who have work, family responsibilities, and as he said, they come home wiped out often. And yet, they get up early in the morning, or they come later in the afternoon, and they constantly push themselves to fit in a duff, to fit in a shear, etc. He says, they show mesiras nefesh. They show, right, they say, giving over of the soul. They show great devotion. He says, that great devotion is a continual re-enthusiasm injector into them. And the Kaddish Baruch Hu is happy with them that they do that. If they can do another mitzvah and they do it, so much more. But when a person actually does something that is, what I would say, out of the ordinary, or it's not what everybody does, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes note. And you're continuing to do that is not in any way considered to be status quo. excuse me. Just trying to see what we have here. One second. He tells the story of a couple who couldn't have children. And Rav Zilberstein says that, unfortunately, if you have two people, both husband and wife, both of whom have infertility problems, he says, tefillah can't help. I don't know where he gets that, but he must know. He says, when only one member of a family, of the spouses, has a problem, you can daven, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will, so to speak, fix the problem. And he tells the story that in Europe, there was a wonderful woman who hadn't had children for 15 or 16 years. And she heard of a fantastic OBGY researcher in Geneva, and she went, and he did the testing, and he said, my poor lady, I have looked at people for long times, and unfortunately, you have the worst of conditions. No one in the world can ever impregnate you. Your physiology doesn't work. The woman was devastated and went home. And she was going to come home, and basically after traveling, she was going to let loose, let the crying, you know, whatever needed to release the pain. And before she did that, she said that, I better not do it close to my home. My father, who is a Talmud Chacham and a Rav, if he hears me, he's going to be totally devastated, and I can't do that to him. So she made it her business, whoever they live, to go to an area, let's say, where there was a barn, and it stank like a barn, Rav Silberstein says. She went in there and she started crying and saying to Hashem, you know, I really am devastated. And lo and behold, her father happened to take that route and he heard his daughter crying that night. And he realized that the reason she was afar from her house was to spare him the grief. He called his daughter to him and he says, I have haftacha that within a year from today, you are going to have a baby. And she said, Daddy, how could that be? He said, what you did, your kibud of, right, was of such a magnitude and of such purity that the angels in heaven have granted your request. And Rav Hill Bernstein says, that was exactly what happened. Okay.